As Joe Biden negotiates his way out of the room, we don't negotiate with the truth. We mandate that the truth be told. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Bob Guida is with me. He is the state senator from the 2nd District of New Hampshire. And I got to tell you, folks, before I even say hello to him, it is unusual that I will have an office holder on this show for any purpose, because quite frankly, this is going to sound weird, and I hope the senator does not hang up on me when I say this, but I have very little use for the people in the state house where I live. Quite frankly, I grew up in New Jersey, so should I digress? Not today. I'll tell you about New Jersey politics another time. But instead, I have a very special guest with me, and for a good purpose, a guy who I've taken a look at. I got to be honest with you. And he speaks straight about a lot of things very clearly, very concisely, and actually appears, I know this sounds strange, actually appears to be seeking to serve the people's interests in the place where he's been elected. That to me is unusual. Okay. So, Senator Guida, welcome to the Chuck Ocelli Show here on TNT Radio. How are you today, sir?
Well, it's, I'm in good health and taking nourishment, so I can't complain. It's a pleasure to be with you today.
Well, sir, I'm happy to have you along, and for a very curious reason, because yesterday I had on individuals from the, the frontline truckers. I had one individual, excuse me. I said plural, but my mistake. Anyway, I had a guy on from that, and it's curious to me that, because the narrative is already in play. They're already trying to make this into something that I don't think was intended by my guest yesterday, who is helping to organize this, who is seeking to have a conversation with those in power one way or another, that I think is a part of the American process as it should be. And it appears as though, unless I'm misinformed, you are all for this peaceful interaction, but meaningful conversation between the people and those in power. And I find this fascinating. So tell me, am I misinformed, sir?
Not at all. I fully support the principle and the intentions of these truckers. Never before in my lifetime, and I would dare say in the history of our country, has there been such a collision between human and constitutional rights and the power of government. With the edicts issuing from the White House and the misinformation in many cases from the CDC, misrepresentation by the political party in power, and fear, which is a terrible motivator, although very effective. What I'm seeing is essentially the erosion of our rights in the interest of safety. And as one of our founders said, when you sacrifice freedom for security, you deserve neither. And we're headed down that road. The mandate for vaccines for healthcare workers is costing people jobs. It's costing their homes, their life savings, and so forth. And it was totally unnecessary. It was totally unnecessary because the measures that they had in place before the mRNA injections were very effective at containing and preventing the spread of COVID in the healthcare institutions. I know this because, first of all, I deal with healthcare institutions as a senator. And secondly, my wife is in fact permanently in a facility for her condition, unfortunately. But the measures are very effective. The vaccine, as they call it, was totally unnecessary. We're watching physical harm come to adults and young people as well. In numbers, in VAERS, the vaccine system that tracks reactions to vaccines that are being claimed to be inaccurate by the CDC, but they use them for every other situation. So there's an awful lot that doesn't make sense. In the final analysis, my decisions as a senator I make because I wasn't elected to protect people's health care I was elected to protect their constitutional rights and their human rights, individual rights, their freedom rights, their God-given rights. And that's ultimately the bottom line for my service.
Right. You're also, just for the record, a Republican who has been directly involved in transitioning, because even though you've been in office for 6 years, obviously you're not in charge of every single aspect of the government there in New Hampshire. You play your part. But you've been responsible for the transition from, well, let's call it the COVID restrictions, back to what people keep describing as the return to normalcy. This has been one of your responsibilities. And it appears as though you have attempted to move forward within the system and speak directly to getting back to, well, you know, what was normal before. So, I mean, that experience alone, and by the way, I wasn't going to bring up anything about your wife. I wasn't aware of that. You know, look, my prayers with you, sir, because you seem to be a good man who is doing the job as prescribed. So I appreciate you just on that grounds alone. You know, what can I say? But the idea that while you're dealing with that personally, you're also looking out for the people that put you in place to represent them. And represent them you are, with a very clear and concise idea about the way that works, is really such a rare thing, I feel. It doesn't matter if you got an R or a D in front of your name to me. I want you to know that, too. I just want some people to go to these places where they're supposed to represent us, you know, the people, and actually do the job. Looks like that's what you're doing to me. And are you getting any sort of static, say, from other people within the establishment government that you'd like to speak to?
No, you know, New Hampshire's an interesting place. Our motto is live free or die, right? And although I will tell you that there's been a decided shift towards the left over the last 10 years or so, nonetheless, people are very prickly. We passed the constitutional amendment enshrining our privacy in an amendment that says the government basically leave us alone as far as privacy. We protect it constitutionally, and yet we're finding that these mandates are violating our integrity as individuals. They are challenging the constitutional rights. We've had a number of cases where religious exemptions from the COVID mandates have not been honored. Again, our governor, Sununu, has done some things well and some things not so well. You know, in the interest of safety, we've given up, I think, some of our rights. And to a degree, that's fine. It's a tough job, I'll tell you, balancing people's fear against, you know, they're looking for leadership. But leadership doesn't necessarily mean compliance with federal edicts. Okay, leadership right. means, again, I was sworn not to protect your health, but protect your constitutional rights against enemies, foreign and domestic. And this pandemic has presented unprecedented challenges to the definition of those rights, much less to their protection.
Yeah, and it's interesting to note that you not only have to adhere to what we call the U.S. Constitution, but I'm pretty sure that New Hampshire has a constitution of its own, which might elaborate on some of these rights in a slightly different way. Because, again, people think that in other countries, let's say, that America is a homogenous place. There is a decided difference between New Hampshire and many of the states that it is immediately bordering, even, you know, or immediately tangentially connected to one way or another, not too far from. How about that? There is a decided difference in New Hampshire. Much like, you know, you go up and down the East Coast, we are not uniform regarding any of this. And there are regional differences. I mean, but anyway, back to the ultimate question here. I mean, what about the states' rights sort of issue here? You know, how did that play out as far as the pandemic restrictions and all that, and possible violations of the Constitution of New Hampshire?
Well, again, we have some ongoing court cases that have been filed for religious exemptions that were denied by medical facilities, and people were terminated. Just that simple. you know, you get to the issue of states' rights. New Hampshire's constitution was a model from which the federal constitution was drawn. We were in fact the ninth state that we, that actually was the requirement out of the 13 colonies to actually ratify the U.S. Constitution. We have a mix of things going on up there. As far as the states' rights, you know, what people don't understand is that by virtue of federal grants and dollars that are supporting fire services, police services, streets, sewers, water systems, schools, roads, we are basically losing our identity as states because we have allowed ourselves to be bought off with federal dollars. And in those federal grants are conditions and stipulations that dictate in many cases what you can and cannot do as a state relative to that issue. As an example, we had a very contentious issue, a $22.5 million grant that was given to the state. I sit on a committee that either allows or disallows the use of that, the acceptance and use of those funds. And that money was to establish a vaccine registry, which we are vehemently opposed to, and also to allow for actual advertising, encouraging people to get the shots. And so that was a very contentious issue. Ultimately, the side seeking or accepting those funds and using them prevailed against my vote. I voted against it. The vote was 6-4 on a 10-person committee. The language, the fine print in that grant stipulated that New Hampshire will follow all CDC requirements, okay, regarding any issue to do with COVID. And you know, our attorney general, unfortunately, said, well, that doesn't really matter. We don't really have to follow that. And I was astounded. Okay. And our executive council, one of the few states that has an executive council as a check and balance against the power of the governor, came in and said, well, you know, if the federal government decides to do something, we'll fight that. Well, you just signed a contract, my friends. And so it was a very contentious issue, one that was, I think, is going to have some effects on the upcoming U.S. Senate race, as well as local political races in the New Hampshire Senate and House.
Right. And you're actually up for election again this year. You've been there 6 years, I think. I could be misinformed there as well, but I know you've been there a bit. Doing the good work so far looks like to me, which, again, I find to be a rare commodity among many people in your position, but your term ends in 2022, I think. And
yeah, there are 2 year terms for all state level offices. Unlike many states that have 4 year terms for governors, the governor, the state representatives, and the state senators are all 2 year terms. So we stay in pretty close touch to our constituents. You have to be out going door to door every other summer, you know, and also, you know, email and social media. You keep in touch. It's a very connected state, arguably. We've got a 400-member House. It's the third largest governing body in the free world, and a very small, a 24-member Senate. So the political process is really, they call it New Hampshire blood sport. I mean, you're in this. We get paid $100 a year as senators and representatives, and they're kind enough to pay us mileage to and from the State House. But you're in it because you're a citizen and you believe in what you're fighting for. It's very easy. You have to balance. Edmund Burke made a comment to the effect of that, you know, your representative is there to give you his industry, but if he only does that and he follows your opinion and not his or her judgment, then he betrays both. Okay, and so we're here because we're elected because people are trusting our judgment. And right now, when you have a stampede of fear promoted by a federal government, okay, with that a non-vaccine that is not preventing the virus and it is not preventing the transmission of the virus, okay, you know, it's very easy to try to fall prey to, well, I have to follow my constituents, but you really don't. As long as you can understand what's happening and explain it, I found the people I represent to be very, very understanding and very, very, willing to see a different way. I guess that's why I'm finishing my third term, you know?
No, absolutely. I totally understand. And I've been trying to pick your brain philosophically here and practically regarding the job you're doing. And again, I appreciate it. And from all what I can observe, you know, again, admirable all the way around. And I got to be frank with you. I don't often say that about the politicians of any kind. But like you said, New Hampshire is kind of an odd place, too. So I'm sure you're not alone. There are others there that are doing the good work, if you will, and following through. I mean, I want to get a little more into what your thoughts are about the frontline truckers. But I think we'll probably wait to get into that a little more until after the break. I'm just kind of getting to know you. And I find this really interesting when I see somebody actually doing the thing. You know, I'm so accustomed to the grift and the graft and people that make a career out of this that are not interested in doing the work, that are really interested in getting paid somehow. And look, full disclosure there, you're getting $100 a year. I mean, you know, you could stand on a street corner and ask for quarters and pick that up quicker in a week, probably. So it's not the money.
No, and, it's not. It's definitely not the money. If you want, we can talk truckers now, or if you have to go to a break, we can get it when you get back.
Well, we'll get into that, but I want to explore you just a little more, if you don't mind, again, I looked at your campaign commercials. I looked at, some other clips of you talking about certain things. You're really an interesting guy. I kind of wish you were here in Georgia. I know my accent doesn't exactly sound like Georgia accents. Okay. I did grow up in New Jersey, so you probably recognize that noise coming out of me. But
I have a fairly unique background. And if I may just, you know, I was raised in the Northeast, New Jersey, Massachusetts, New Hampshire. Graduated from the U.S. Naval Academy, was a Marine Corps attack pilot, carrier based. Left the Marines, went to work as an FBI agent, didn't like that, flew corporate jets for a while, and then went to United Airlines. But I've had a life that enabled me to see all forms of government and the consequences thereof. I've been in China. I've been in Singapore. I've been in Bahrain. I've been in Dubai. I've been in Kuwait. I've been in Pakistan. I've been all over the world, and seen, how much better our form of government is, so long as we respect the fact that we are not a democracy, we are a constitutional republic. And our founders despised democracy. They reviled it. They did everything they could to avoid it. And that's when you remember Franklin's famous answer to the lady. He said, "What have you given us?" And he said, "Well, you know, a republic if you can keep it." And that's the quandary that we face, because, as government does more and more because people are doing less and less, that's basically the onset of gradual government control of the means of production of our goods and services and our lives. And that's textbook definition of socialism. We are perilously close. I listened to the speech of the president last night, and he's just promoting socialism. Freebies for everybody, free health care, free. There's no such thing as a freebie. As Thatcher said, Margaret Thatcher some years ago as the prime minister of Great Britain, you know, socialism is great until you run out of other people's money. We're running an incredible debt and deficit spending and a government that's spending, its spending has cost 7.5% inflation so far, and it's going to get worse. We have a president who is driving up the price of fuel, oil, gas, diesel, by virtue of shutting down the Keystone Pipeline, yet we're taking in 600,000 barrels a day of Russian oil, thereby supporting Vladimir Putin's war against Ukraine. I mean, it makes no sense what's happening. There needs to be leadership, not pandering. There's a big difference.
No, absolutely. And look, I witnessed that State of the State address, okay, because State of the Union, I'm not so sure we're united at this point. I witnessed that, and I found it to be, badly scripted. I mean, listen, and objectively, I am not on the R or D side of the equation, okay? Just bear with me a second. Donald Trump was better at improving, okay, than Joe Biden for sure. And previous to that, Barack Obama was better at reading a script. I mean, you know, let's get honest, okay? I don't see anything good coming out of that speech last night. I saw a lot of virtue signaling. I saw actually badly timed applause. It was just...
I'm going to tell you what I saw.
Sure, please.
When the president of the United States stands up and says we're having unprecedented success in securing the southern border, that's just a bald-faced lie. He lied to the American people, and I'm willing to say that because he did that. The border is a wide open conduit. It's a gaping wound in the security of our nation from every aspect, from security from terrorism, from security from disease, security from narcotics, a gaping wound in our borders. And his policies have opened it and kept it open. And as a result, we are seeing diseases come back. We're seeing epidemic of drugs coming in through Mexico, unquestionably. I work with our state police, and as a former FBI agent, you know, I still have people that are knowledgeable in that field. I have sources of intelligence that I use from time to time. And it's unquestionable how he could say that to 300 million people watching, okay, is unconscionable. The president of the United States.
Well, the constant shell game in D.C., and, you know, what did they used to say? The politics there are what? Hollywood for ugly people? I mean, you know, I'm not casting judgments on people's appearances, but you got to have a different skill set to make it in Hollywood than you do in D.C., okay? A lot of it is acting. And let's be honest. I'm not respecting the R or the D or the I in front of the name, okay? It's just, it is what it is, and it is the constant distraction. It's got nothing to do with the reality. And, you know, here we are. But anyway, here we're going to be New Hampshire State Senator Bob Guida is with me. And I'm going to get more into the trucker situation after we go to a little break here because, well, after all, the Chuck Cochelli Show on TNT Radio is live. And we got to pause for a cause now and then. So stick around.
The ones that matter most are the children. There is a special place in South Dakota. A place of hope, love, safety, and opportunity for Native American children. This place is St. Joseph's Indian School. Here, we preserve traditions, provide Lakota kids a safe place to learn, attend to the mind, body, heart, and spirit of every child in our care.
As a father, I feel very good about leaving my kids here, and they have way more opportunities here.
I can come on campus and I can feel the good vibes and the children, they can really grow.
Together, we are giving Lakota children brighter futures and a proud connection to their past. To learn more, go to helplakotakids.org today.
In many countries around the world, medical care is scarce. From birth defects to serious injuries and illnesses, countless millions have no access to safe surgery. Mercy Ships is there to help. With a team of volunteer professionals, nurses, surgeons, utilizing state-of-the-art hospital ships, Mercy Ships provides free surgeries for the thousands of those who are waiting for surgery at each port.
Mercy Ships is bringing services to countries that would otherwise never be able to access those services.
We just see people that need help. You realize that they have no way of getting help, and I want them to know that they're loved.
Help make a lasting impact and turn someone's fear to joy. Find out how you can help by visiting our website at mercyships.org for more information. That's mercyships.org.
Chuck Cochelli on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Bob Guida, state senator from the state of New Hampshire, live free or die, their state slogan, that is the way it is. And gotta say, that is the sentiment I appreciate, you know, during this discussion. I definitely picked his brain in the first half, but now we're really going to get there because the frontline truckers thing, I want to return to it. And of course, we discussed it yesterday. Go ahead back at tntradio.live and check out the Chuck Cochelli Show, and you'll find, I think it was, I don't remember which hour it was yesterday, but in one of those hours, I think the first, I talked to Kip Coltrane, And, you know, we discussed the organizational principles behind it and everything else. And here's a guy who's in public office that is on the side of these guys, the principles that they have presented. I hope that it gets executed the same way. And as we move forward, I already see in my mind that there is going to be a propaganda, a PR campaign, whatever, that is going to try and smear and dirty these guys up before they actually even get anywhere near DC. So I'm wondering, you know, Senator Guida, once again, are you concerned at all that your support for them publicly could cause you any issues politically in the near future?
No, I'm not. And the reasons are simple. First and foremost, this is a valid exercise of their constitutional rights under the First Amendment, freedom of assembly, freedom of speech, amongst others. And they are speaking as working class Americans from whom Washington, D.C. is so utterly detached that it's embarrassing. All right. For the American people and working men and women that are driving these rigs to take time out of their lives to pay the rising costs of fuel and to peacefully and lawfully make a statement that, you know, we value our rights to the degree that we're willing to peacefully, lawfully, you know, convoy around the United States. I'm watching with amusement as Washington, D.C. fortifies itself. We won't build a fence across the border, but we'll certainly build fences in D.C. against truckers who aren't even going to protest there. They're just going to be in the area. They're there to make a statement to the men and women of Congress that represent us, supposedly, that enough is enough. Again, we see a vaccine that's not a vaccine. Now there's actual proof, medical proof, that the mRNA does in fact change the DNA within the liver. That's a fact. The Journal of the American Medical Association put that out. All right, so this, again, the collision between our rights, both constitutional and God-given natural freedom rights, and government authority has never been more clearly demonstrated as it is here. And the courage of these men and women who are, again, peacefully, lawfully exercising their rights, I think deserves credit and deserves to be supported. We have a government that, through edicts of the president, declared an emergency, has issued healthcare requirements for people that is costing some people, through the exercise of their conscience, their jobs, their homes, their livelihoods, their life savings. This is a commendable effort. This is what America is about. Okay, when people want to talk to me about how wrong this is, all I do is point to Seattle, Portland, Los Angeles, San Francisco, Detroit, and tell me which form of protest you would rather have. Constitutional, legitimate, law-abiding, coordinated with local law enforcement officials, okay, or riots, arson, murder, and that sort. So I support these folks not only for what they're doing, but how they're doing it.
Well, any peaceful assembly, I would support anyway, regardless of what their point of view is. If there are enough people to make an assembly, you know, again, regardless of political orientation or anything else, if there is a peaceful assembly, I stand with it. It's just that simple. There is this concept of like, well, these people are, you know, yet another form of insurrectionist, et cetera, da, da, da. I just can't. You're talking about guys who are true believers still. I've got to say, I envy them because, frankly, I felt dispossessed by the system. I have felt ignored by the system. I have felt, if anything, if I engage, the only thing I can guarantee myself is pain with the system. And that is the orientation I've personally taken on. I don't expect you or anybody else to adapt to it or adopt to it, but I'm going to make that statement wherever, whenever I can. This is my personal experience, and I respect your right to speak to yours. And I think that's very American of me, after all. Okay. I think that's part of the fabric of the reality that we were told about when we were children, for sure. I mean, and you and I were born not too far apart. although some years apart, sir, sorry. You are a bit older than me, I think. But either way, you were born in New York, New York. I was born in New Jersey, okay? Not too far away. There is a decidedly different attitude there regarding, you know, all of this stuff that you've talked about. I don't know how it is, because I haven't lived in New Jersey in several years. I don't know how it is they're receiving it there. I'm almost glad I'm not there during this time when things are so divisive, so ridiculous, that we've gotten to a point where accomplishing anything seems so highly unlikely. And yet, I see guys like you, very rare, but I see guys like you actually attempting to and achieving, not just attempting, but and achieving honorable goals in office. So I'm awfully glad to talk to you and want to know, in the context of what it is that they are seeking to make a statement about, or make several statements about, not just the vaccine mandate, by the way. That's another piece of misinformation out there. It's not the only thing that they wish to redress as a grievance. It is a serious concern on their list, but it's not the only one. Just let's keep that straight right now.
Sure.
And I don't mean that for you, Senator. I mean, anybody listening.
No, you're accurate. Your point is well taken.
Yeah, I appreciate it. And the thing is, I want to know actually what your ideas about the future are, because look, I could ask you about your view on Ukraine, and if you want to speak to it, go, sure, no problem. You know, I have a rather anti-war sentimentality here. You might have a different point of view. Obviously, having served, I never have served. Plenty of my family has, but not me. Physical limitation. Okay, that's all there is to it. But otherwise, I would have. But anyway, the thing is, I'd love to hear about that if you want, but really what I'm interested in is the thing you're actually engaged in directly, because frankly, no offense, you're not going to affect foreign policy at the moment from where you sit. So you're going to do the job that you were sent to go do. And that's the kind of guy I think you are. You're going to deal with that. You might have your views though. I'll hear them, but I'm curious about your vision moving forward in New Hampshire. And also what you think might be the positive results from this convoy and your support of it.
Well, I think there are a lot of people, I'm certainly in New Hampshire, and I would be willing to conjecture around the country, okay, who are waking up to the fact that some great concerns regarding future freedoms for future generations need to be voiced and need to be vetted. Again, we have a Congress that is deadlocked, although thank God for Joe Manchin and the senator from Arizona, the lady senator, for protecting our voting rights. The people, I think, are looking for leadership, and we're not getting it from Washington. No way, shape, or form. So ultimately, we have to remember, right? We the people, right? The power of the consent of the governed is where the government gets its power. And as the ignorance that was surrounding COVID universally is beginning to be dispelled, and data is coming in, when we honestly analyze all the data, we realize that some significant missteps were made. That all that was claimed was not true, that the benefits that were trumpeted were not always true, and that lives are being lost because of government policy. That is a dangerous situation, and as a nation, we need to address it. So the truckers are stepping up to the plate to highlight the concerns that they have. And, I said on an earlier program, you know, if the truckers really wanted to play hardball, all they really have to do is stop trucking. Just that simple.
It's just
and
not go
life
to work.
As we know, it ends in 3 days. Some of the stores, because of supply chain disruptions, because of this, some of the mandates, and of course, exacerbated by the U.S.-Canadian vaccine card mandate for truckers to go between the countries, some of our stores are bare shelved already in some of the categories of goods that they carry. But 90% of the goods in this country are carried by trucks. That's to the places that we buy them, ultimately, therefore, supplying our homes and our businesses. So if they wanted to be destructive in what they're doing, they could very easily do that. But they're choosing not to. They're making a positive statement, exercising their constitutional freedoms, and expressing the fact that working class Americans are getting fed up with the government. Extension of the emergency that Biden just did is ridiculous. It's simply ridiculous. And there is an intent there to maintain the level of absolute control that this administration is exercising over people who are growing increasingly tired, okay, of having their lives dictated by a virus that is now an endemic and no longer a pandemic.
You know, I want to engage with you on this point because I believe that more than one thing is happening here regarding the supply chain issue that they're telling us about. Okay. And you might notice that I have a suspicious mind, sir. So bear with me. I think that a great many excuses are being pawned off on COVID regardless of the reality of a circumstance. Why do I say something like this? Okay. I'm very interested in, and this may have no bearing on you whatsoever, but just, again, bear with me. I'm very interested in the JFK assassination. The document releases, which were delayed for 25 years, kicked down the road when they were supposed to be by, you know, President Trump, and then kicked down the road again by President Biden, not fully released, even though there were 25 years of time to prepare for said releases. Based on those actions, I mean, just take my word for this if you don't know or don't care about this subject. But interestingly, when they said, well, we can't release this stuff right now, COVID was an excuse. COVID had something to do with not releasing files. Even though they're able to do it online and everything else, there's no contact required for them to do this. So that happened. And also, I think that there are opportunists in the corporate world, sir, that are taking advantage of the situation. I mean, very much like the spike in oil price at this point, which is a separate issue, I know. But quite frankly, I think there are corporate raiders here who are saying, you know what? If I hold back my product, I'll be able to sell it next week more expensive. It'll give me a better price point. I think that's happening simultaneous with this other issue. And just like the oil issue, we saw that metric broken. And it literally resulted in a negative oil price on the market at one point. Record high profits for the oil companies. I feel like there is a bit of opportunism at play in the corporate world as well, which is affecting supply chain, cost issues, price points, along with the ineptitude of the government in general, and I do mean the federal government, regarding their handling, no matter what your point of view is on the alleged pandemic. Okay. And I say alleged. What are your thoughts on that? Am I way off base?
Well, you know, there's a lot that we don't see and a lot that we don't know. But when you start connecting dots, my first problem is that we spent $600,000 at least, okay, admittedly, weaponizing a virus. Gain of function is nothing more than the military weaponization of a biological weapon. And the fact that our country did that, I find to be reprehensible as a United States Marine and as a Naval Academy graduate. Okay. I understand that the world is not a nice place. But I believe that this virus was loosed willfully. And when you look at where it spread and how fast it spread, and when you combine that with things like our open border to the south, when you combine that with the fact that regardless of the fact that President Trump closed the airline service to China right away, very quickly, despite assertions otherwise by the other party, there's just too many coincidences here that have destroyed the U.S. economy, that have demoralized the U.S. people, that have debilitated our American military, and the decisions made by this administration are in fact counter, I believe, to the best interests of the United States. while we teach our kindergartners and our school children about gender equity, schools in other parts of the world are teaching their kids how to assemble and disassemble AK-47s blindfolded. Okay. We're going to at some point have to deal with the reality that the world isn't a nice place. We have to help our kids have been misled by our education institutions. New Hampshire established an Education Freedom Accounts last year. Okay. And that means that parents have choice in where their kids go to school. It's not absolute, but it's certainly a really big step forward. And we're finding that parents are waking up because of COVID to the unbelievable things that are being taught and the indoctrination that is being accomplished through our quote unquote public schools. Okay. And that is why we're in New Hampshire. I can speak with authority to this. We're seeing hundreds of citizens step forward to run for school boards to straighten out the nonsense. Problem is, we've got generations. We've got 50 years of this stuff that's been taught with increasing intensity and increasing breadth across the issues that are besetting our country. Communism does several things. First, they attack religion. Okay, and if you read George Washington's inaugural and farewell addresses, especially the farewell address, he talks about a nation that loses its basis in faith does not long remain a free people. These guys studied history, and they studied every civilization before they put together the most incredible documents giving us the freedoms that we have. All right, so that's the first thing the communists attack. I used to fly trips to Beijing, Shanghai, Hong Kong as a United captain. And when I would go to church, I'd walk in the church, and inside the door of the church were the cameras and the recording devices of the Chinese Communist Party in church. Okay, they were looking at who went, what was heard, what was said. Okay, they break down the church, the religion first. Second, they go after the family. I can speak with some authority in New Hampshire. Again, I don't look at national statistics at this point in time. I'm not there. 46% of the children born in New Hampshire are born to single mothers. What we're saying is that half of the children are born to broken homes or to women pregnant out of wedlock. Now, the model for the successful family was given by the Almighty. It was a father and a mother. When half of your people are having children out of wedlock without a father, you've got a major disruption to the society. When you look at the explosion of drugs, when you look at all of this stuff, and I say this without batting an eye, every societal ill that government thinks it's solving is a joke. We are solving symptoms. We're not solving problems. If the ultimate problem comes back to one thing and only one. And no, I'm not an evangelical, and no, I'm not a rabid Christian. I'm a practicing Catholic. But every ill we have in our country comes back to the lack of respect for Almighty God as the author of life. Plain and simple. That's it. I've spent 25 years in the political realm, from local through state government, state house, legislature, Senate, local select board, everything. Okay. And the entire basis of our civilization was those Christian values that were enshrined in the Ten Commandments, and when getting violated, start producing the disruptions that we see in our society. Epidemic drug use, incredible explosion of opioids and others. Methamphetamine's going rampant now. Okay, heroin across the southern border, cocaine, all of these things. Women pregnant out of wedlock. When you break the social contract that you have as an individual in performing your responsibilities to a society, you are harming the society that gave you the very gifts that you're trashing. And when you teach things that are not consistent with moral values, when you say that, you know, homosexuality is an acceptable lifestyle, well, it might be, but it's also an objectionable one when you look at the society, the fabric of society as it is unraveling as we continue to see these things enshrined in law. So, I mean, I'm making some pretty bold pronouncements here. But this is my 70 years on Earth. I'm in my eighth. I started 2 weeks ago, my eighth decade on this planet. And I've seen a lot of stuff, and I've been a lot of places, and I've been involved in many things. And I've been in other parts of the world. Okay. I know that our society, our societal structure is unraveling as we continue to implement into law things that were considered not only inappropriate, but just plain wrong a century ago. Again, when we see corporations gouging the American public, which they are, when you see Big Pharma charging us 8 to 10 times the price for insulin that they charge in any other country in the world, that's unconscionable. Okay? That's the worship of money over principle. Corporations in America, CEOs used to be proud that they were United States corporate leaders. Now this globalization has taken place. I blame the banks. They weren't getting the return on investment in the now mature U.S. economy. So they invaded third world countries and the quote unquote developing nations because they could get labor at a buck an hour, sometimes a buck a day. They didn't have clean air and clean water restrictions. To produce something in the United States, okay, is 35% more expensive than producing that same thing in China just by virtue of our labor laws, our clean air and clean water laws, and so forth. I'm not saying those are bad. I'm saying that the standard that China is not held to is and to which we hold ourselves to, China is spewing forth millions of tons of pollutants as we hamstring our companies with scrubbers and so forth. Again, we've lost sight of reality. We continue to assign to other cultures the same value sets that we have. And that's fatal. You do that in a combat zone, you die. Okay. And so all of these things, the American people are waking up. They're beginning to understand the peril that they're in. And these truckers, God bless them, they are just raising that flag and raising the clarion call of, hey, folks, there's something dreadfully wrong here. And it's more than just individual items, as you were saying. There's something intrinsically upside down. And we as a nation have to come together collectively to fix it. And it isn't going to get done with more social spending. It isn't going to get done with giving Putin 600,000 barrels worth or taking Putin 600,000 barrels a day so he can fund the atrocities being committed in Ukraine. Okay. It is when we as a people realize the God-given rights that we have and say, you know what? It's time to get back to basics here. Let's look at what made us great. And let's look at what's making us not so great. And let's work together to get those values back into practice.
Well, as our time gets almost to the end here, Senator, and I really appreciate you taking this time to speak with me today. Look, you and I could debate some of what you just said, and we could discuss it, and we should, because that's part of the process here. Okay, that's the way it's supposed to be. And here's the thing that's forgotten, and I think you already gave us the entirety of the solution earlier on in our discussion. And that is the forgotten principle that the truth about the power structure, a lot of people talk about it and say, well, the federal government is above the state governments and the state government is above the local government. And they forgot the real top of the power pyramid.
That's right. It's upside down. They're upside down.
We, the people, we are the ones who are supposed to be in charge. All of us. Okay. That's the thing. We're supposed to be in charge. I mean, and I'm telling you something that I know you take as a core principle. Regardless of the level of service you have chosen to serve, and through the military, through other actions, now in the State House in New Hampshire, you recognize that you're there to do the people's business. And this is the thing that I think has been left out of the equation. I'll say one thing in favor of communism, by the way. Just hold on. Don't hang up on me, Senator. One thing in favor of communism here, as opposed to what it is we have in America at the moment, communism is at least coherent. Okay. They have a strategy. They implement it. It actually makes sense. I'm not saying it's good. I'm not saying it's moral. I'm not saying, no. I just said they have a coherent strategy. What we have now is incoherent, is inaccurate, is fallible beyond belief when it comes to strategic considerations. It's not even strategically sound what it is we're looking at here, the behavior of the whole of government at this point when it comes to the federal government for sure. But it doesn't necessarily mean that everybody who is involved has been bought and paid for and is part of the negative impact. Guys like you are doing the job and not doing it because you're getting paid well, you've got a great pension coming, all of this other stuff. And despite whatever's gone on in your personal life, as you stated, you have a circumstance there. You certainly, I'm sure you're a man. You have challenges. You have a life to lead too. All people do. And you're trying to do the work for all of those others that, guess what, elected you. And like I said, I find it to be a rarity anymore. And maybe I'm just too jaded to recognize it sometimes, but I got to be honest with you. I've been disappointed in the past. And I'm really glad to hear from you. And I'd like to give you just like a minute here to give everybody sort of a final sentiment. And frankly, I'd love to speak with you again on this program or any other regarding the developments as they go. And please do. I'll give everybody again that reference. Go back to my discussion yesterday on TNT here, and you can find it under my show. But Senator Bob Guida, what would be your closing sentiment, sir?
Well, you know, it took us 110 years to get into the mess we're in. Okay, it's going to take us a while to get out, and it's going to take the American people. It's their country. It's our country. I speak as a citizen patriot, not as a senator. Okay, it's our country to win or lose. And as Ronald Reagan said so brilliantly, you know, freedom is never more than a generation from being lost. Okay. It doesn't come in our bloodstream. We have to work at it. And so my exhortation to the folks that may be listening is, hey, it's your country. It's your kids. It's for your children. The Democrats or the liberals say it's for the children. And they indoctrinate these kids with bad thinking in our schools. Okay. If you love your children, then you should get active in your government. That's the only way this thing works. Because when 90% of the people don't vote or don't get involved, they vote and walk away, then bad things happen. And it may be unintentional or it may be intentional, but the best mix of outcomes in our political system is derived with the greatest input of the greatest number of people. And so I just tell people, it's yours. Get into that school board meeting. Go to your town council meeting. Go to watch your state legislature. Many of them are on Zoom, and many of the stuff is archived for forever. We, you know, everything in New Hampshire is in a permanent video audio journal. You can see anything I've ever said in 6 years in the state Senate, for real. So it's our country. It's ours to lose. Let's not do that. We have a better legacy than that to leave for our kids.
Absolutely certain. And, hopefully you listening, if you're here in the United States, will become involved in any which way you can. Raise up your voice, because there's no other way it's going to get heard. Anyway, we're going to news now. Stick around. The Chuck Ocelli Show will return on TNT.